You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
gonna do?
Do you really think that?
Do you think it all? Yeah.
Our government cares about
they
you.
They ain't giving get up a second down. Thought about you, no. Ghetto people.
Who you gonna turn to next?
Tell
ghetto
me.
People.
You gotta take a look at yourself, yeah. Ghetto people. With your life
running like a red disease,
running like a red disease. Ghetto people,
stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, young. You got to learn to love yourself. Yeah, ghetto people.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Maafa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Maafa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement: Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted. And we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotel family, hope everything was well for you today. Hope you had a good day yesterday, an even better day today, and great day tomorrow. So I hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. And I hope the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But of course, if it's not, and it has to get done, you will get it done. Because that's the kind of brother and sister that you is. And you will do it safely. You'll wear your mask. You'll keep your distance. You see what's happening in Texas. The governor opened up the whole state, said it could be maximum numbers of people, no mask required, the mask, there are no mandates or anything like that. This is crazy. But anyway, hope everything is well with you today. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. If you cannot listen to this program live, but of course you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. At the top of the page, you'll see podcasts. Click on that. The drop down, you'll see African Perspectives, and you click on that, and there will be programs that are dated and titled. Other programming you have here on Time for an Awakening Media. Once again, this program every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. All times are going to give our Eastern times. On Mondays from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds, Public Affairs Programming out of Philadelphia with Brother Jahad Ahmed. Followed by from 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Mawia Kamban and Nataki Kamban. Followed by from 9 to 10, Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey from Encobra on Mondays. Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Thursdays, from 7 to 9, Melanin Live with Chief Lance Jones and Sister Benisiwa Ayan. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern Time, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Fridays at 8 p.m. Saturday from 4 to 6, Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And then on Saturday evening from 7 to 9, the Sankofa Elders Council. Then on Sunday at 7 p.m. once again, it is Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Sunday at 7 p.m. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We Buy Black. We Buy Black, the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses, is WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses from WeBuyBlack.com, products that are produced by us. It's WeBuyBlack.com. I'm hoping, brothers and sisters, that you will go online, purchase these products, and also hope that you will be kind enough to donate to establishing a supermarket here in the Atlanta area, which would be replicated throughout other metropolitan areas where we have a sizable number of our people. It's what must be done. Brothers and sisters,
I know it's clear on the nose of your damn face. Cooperative economics is necessary. Pulling resources is vital. Ain't nobody gonna do this for us but us. We buy black. Africa for the Africans, Brother Bamani Tayemba. AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Give Brother Bamani a call at 404-931-9429. That's 404-931-9429. If you want to see pictures of previous tours, go to Facebook.com/Bamani. If you want to see videos of previous tours, go to YouTube.com/Bamani2007. AfricaForTheAfrican.org. Senegal, he's have a trip coming up next month, April 2nd through the 12th, Senegal and Gambia. And then a trip in May, May 24th to June 5th, Ghana, going back to Ghana. And then in November, November 18th through the 29th, Tanzania, formerly, but it's pronounced Tanzania, but the West pronounces it Tanzania. So I don't want to confuse nobody. Make sure you got it right, Tanzania. And then right at the end of the year, December 24th to January 5th, 2022, Ghana. Once again, finish it off in Ghana. AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Baba Renoko, I'm not sure what programs he has coming up. I'm going to check with him to see what he has coming up. So you will be comprised of any Zoom meetings or whatever that he has coming up. I hope you had a chance to go, some of you, whoever, last weekend when he finished up his piece on ancient Kemet. Habesha Incorporated.org. The brothers and sisters with Habesha here in Atlanta doing outstanding work. You know, what Habesha is a Pan-African organization that cultivates leadership in youth families through practical experiences in cultural education, sustainable agriculture, entrepreneurship, holistic health, and technology. The programs are Habesha Works, Black to Our Roots, Sustainable Seeds, Golden Growers, and Urban Green Jobs. And, of course, the Kashi Project that is going on in Ghana as we speak. The houses are being put up. The Kashi Project. That is Habesha. Habesha stands for Helping Africans by Establishing Schools at Home and Abroad. The LEDGE Group. The LEDGE Group. LEDGE stands for Land for the Environmental Development of Group Economics. Brothers and sisters, they deal with the vital things in human life. Food, water, clothing, and shelter. They have 12 projects going on the continent and 6 countries with over 170 people employed and over 260 members. Become a part of the LEDGE Group. Go to ledgegroup.com, theledgegroup.com. Also, I mentioned that in Tanzania, they have an agreement with the Tanzanian government to offer land to members. You have to become a member of the LEDGE Group at $250 an acre. $250 an acre. Check out the LEDGE Group. Bibi Atumi. I'll be promoting Bibi Atumi every day on this program, BibiAtumi.com. Brothers and sisters, go to BibiAtumi.com, A-B-I-B-I-T-U-M-I, BibiAtumi.com. They have a program this weekend, the African-Centered Conscious program this Saturday, and it's at 2 p.m. Eastern, Okay. That's 2 p.m. And so that's 9 a.m. Eastern time, from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. Eastern time. That's the Eastern time this Saturday, 9 a.m. exclusively at Bibi Atumi. Okay. Brother Kamal Kamban and his son discuss what happens when our goal was to raise consciousness rather than raising behavior. This lopsided effect has led to those who may appear to have African-centered thought and even African-centered speech, but the behavior is anything but African-centered. Oh, that's great. Yeah, that's not, check that out. That's great. Brother, that's this Saturday, March 6th, 9 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. Go to bibiatumi.com. And then once it'll come up and you can reserve your spot if you are a member. All right. Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar. Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar, located in the West End. Great smoothies and healthful drinks and so forth, and pastries and sandwiches. Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar. They have all kinds of things going on. People are selling stuff up in there, and they do have a vegan caterer on the weekend, on Saturdays and Sundays. At Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar, right across the street from Soul Veg, right down the street from the Shrine of the Black Madonna. I'm not sure what's happening at the Shrine. I know they were open on weekends, on Friday and Saturday from 1 to 7, but I'm not sure. But check it out. Wadada's. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall, Mama Nia, she's open now. A nice mama space she has. So give her a call if you're looking for a book and she doesn't have it. I'm quite sure she'll get it. So give her a call at 404-346-3263. 404-346-3263. That's the Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. A fine selection of books, postcards, greeting cards, certificates, T-shirts, figurines, all kinds of good stuff at the Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. The other bookstore that we promote, of course, is the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia, that is east of here in the Atlanta suburb. And Brother Gazimde Ajamu has his coffee bar ups. It's serving delicious Cameroon boyo. It's my good brother. So give him a call, 404-519-8107. 404-519-8107. Okay, where are we at now? I got to keep track of all this good stuff. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa. I just mentioned how important collective Ujamaa is, of us being collective. It is vitally important. And so the Thursday night broadcast tomorrow night from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m., 1 hour, go to blogtalkradio.com/ULU. The name of the program is Dare to Win. That is Us Lifting Us. If you want to give a call to ask a question, just to listen, or ask a question or comment or concern, dial 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789. That's Us Lifting Us. Sun Goddess Scents. Sun Goddess Scents, your one-stop natural shop located at 4140 Jonesboro Road in Forest Park, Georgia, inside the International Discount Mall, booth 225. That's my good brother, Ken Wardo, and of course his better half, his compliment, Sister Shelley. And give Sister Shelley a call at 404-434-7963. That's 404-434-7963. They got the nice grooming stuff for your beard, and of course incense and all kinds of good stuff at Sun Goddess Scents. Sanjay Dash Aidi, Sister Gabrielle Aurelia, has been doing outstanding work in the northeastern portion of the island of Haiti. Go to Sanjay, S-O-N-J-E dash Haiti, A-Y-I-T-I .org, and check it out. Sanjay dash Haiti. Ackerman Institute, Baba Baruti, Mama Yah, they need your support. If you want to send a check, make it out to Aquavit Institute. Send it to P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. That's Aquavit Institute, P.O. Box 10786, 30310. But, of course, you can use PayPal and Cash App. You want to use Cash App, the dollar sign, Yah, Y-A-A, the letter M, and Baruti, B-A-R-U-T-I. And you can make your consistent donations, and that is so desperately needed. Believe me, and you know it. That's right, I said it. You know it. The Inye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. March 2nd. When you know that the life and the spirit of others depend on your life and your spirit, you have no right to be afraid, even when you're terribly afraid. In the cruel times we are living through, we must find our own strength somehow and force ourselves to be hard. Warriors are not here to convince anyone of anything. They are not proselytizers and are well acquainted with the fact that they are casualties in every war. What they are here for is to support, through experience, through theory, a working knowledge of our timeless tradition and direct functional application, any and all other warriors who have chosen to stand and be African, those who operate within Yoruba's social and cultural paradigm, who have fallen for their twisted racist ideologies, worldview, and interpretations of reality, who willfully and fully participate in any way promote Yoruba's insanity, are of no concern to them, except to the degree that they become intentional obstacles to the warrior's actual work as frontliners. Our warrior's only work here is to speak and be African and speak African truth. Those committed to alien ways are welcome to them as long as they do not interfere with this work. Treason, like loyalty, is a choice when truth is readily available. Warriors cannot make any African African. That is not their work. They know who they are and who they serve amongst the living, to transition and yet to return. Their work is to be instruments of Ma'at, to activate karma, to return order and sovereignty to African people, to our people. Affirm, no fear stands in the way of my work. Affirm, no fear stands in the way of my work. March 3rd, our children should be picked out and trained for leadership from birth. You can watch how that child handles a fork. Watch that child's ability to share with the group. Watch that child's ability to protect the group and to accept the training that will make that child improve. We should spot leaders early and begin to train them. We should make a priesthood of this effort. Dr. John Henry Clark. Despite the rationalized fantasy of many of our own adults and our own adults that feed them, if you talk with our children today, inquiring into their honest perception of who is in charge of this post-racial society, this post-racial reality, most will tell you that Europeans are in charge. They know this just as we do. They may not be able to provide you with the concrete evidence of their knowing or scientifically communicate this social arrangement, but they can unequivocally tell you that white folks rule this reality. Their brutal, telling honesty and the efforts of so many adults to lie to them in the face of impending destruction is reminiscent of the story of the little boy who saw and said that the king had nothing on, while all the adults were dizzy shushing him and affirming each other's self-deception of this naked man who was fully clothed. Affirm, I'm creating a priesthood out of the warrior in training I observed. Affirm, I am creating a priesthood out of the warriors in training that I have observed. The Inye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. Is that right? Mama Nabantu just sent me a communications for anybody who wants some collard green ice cream. That's right. Wadada's is the only place that you can get collard. So once again, Wadada's in the West End on Ralph David Abernathy. You can get collard green ice creams, brother. And collard green ice cream is good. I appreciate that, Mama Nabantu. Your philosophy determines your thought pattern. Your thought pattern determines your attitude. Your attitude determines your behavior pattern, and your behavior pattern determines your actions. It begins with what you think, and it ends with what you do. If your philosophy, because of what you think, and of course that has been influenced by the society, and this society has consistently taught us to think, particularly of ourselves as people, as men, as women, as children, as elders, and aunts, to be negative, to be mean-spirited and hateful towards ourselves. So if that philosophy, what you think, then imagine what your actions are going to be. Self-hating. We ain't nothing. It begins with what you think and begins with what you do. But if your philosophy is that you are able to reject all that negativity, you are able to reject all that foolishness, and you begin to believe strongly in who we are as African people, that philosophy will be strong. And then your actions will speak loud. Because a lot of times it ain't about what you think or what you even say. It's what you do. It's what you do. What you do for yourself depends upon what you think of yourself. And what you think of yourself depends upon what you know of yourself. And what you know of yourself depends upon what you have been told. Who's doing the telling? That's why on this program, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and there are many other programs, I pray that are like this. We tell you the truth. Whether you like it or not, we tell you the truth. Our perspective. The African way. The way of our ancestors. The only way for African people to be independent, self-determining, liberated, and sovereign. The only way. We must not be the people who walked but left no footprints, who talked but had nothing meaningful to say, who labored but built nothing for themselves. And so, we lay at your feet, the builders spade and shovel, the masons troll and square. Africa's books of wisdom, go now and build for eternity. Lester Velt Middleton. Lester Velt Middleton. Like I said, I have a deeper respect for Brother Lester Velt. I always appreciated listening to his interviews with some of our greatest scholars, and you can go on YouTube and listen to those. But he was a builder. He built his house in North Carolina. It's phenomenal. It is phenomenal. Today, dear brothers and sisters, I don't know if some of you caught last night's program, A Soul of a Nation on ABC. One segment of The Soul of a Nation had to deal with reparations, which we're going to deal with. Not so much today, but continuously to talk about it and get more information about what's happening in Evanston, Illinois. Evanston, Illinois, suburb of Chicago, the northern area of Chicago, the home of Northwestern University. Northwestern University is one of the top universities in the country. Northwestern University. And so they talked about reparations. The council in Evanston are putting forth a bill, the council of reparations. Because when people started to move to Evanston, Illinois, they were redlined. Just as a brother who was 96 years old, sharp as a tack, and his son. They said, we'll build you a house here. Yeah, but it's only going to be in this area. You can't choose, really, the area you really want to live in. We're saying this is designated. The Fifth Ward is yours. And, of course, being redlined, you don't get monies coming in there. You don't get a lot of things, services and so forth. We know. You know, so as I'm listening to it, and they talk about $25,000. I don't know if that's a per person. Let's say it's $25,000 a person. Well, if you have a family of four, that's, you know, it's $100,000. It's $100,000 to that family. Now, if you've listened to this program, you know that I am a proponent of reparations, but I'm not so bent on individuals getting money, because to me, reparations mean repair. We have to be repaired. The damage that has been done to us is serious. I mentioned too many times about this Caucasian named George Kutheimer, who is a columnist, editorialist. I think New York Times, Washington Post, one of them, both of them, I don't give a damn. Anyway, I never forget, I was still in the fire department a long time ago, because it was when I think I had about a few years on. I read the article because affirmative action, that's how I got my job. He said, we have given them affirmative action. We have given them welfare. We have given them this, that, and the other. You know, give them reparations. Right, yeah, give them right now. 20,000 individual, you know, 50,000 a family, whatever. Give it to them, because the mindset that they have, it'll be just like a stimulus package. In fact, that's what it'll be. They'll stimulate the economy. They'll buy Cadillacs. They'll buy jewelry. They'll buy this. They'll buy that. We'll get that money back within months. And because we have paid them off, we have given you everything. So shut up. Don't want to hear it. There ain't no class action suits. And if you feel you've been discriminated against, you better bring good corroborating evidence. Otherwise, out the door it goes. And that's the reality of reparations even today, as far as I'm concerned. That's why, I mean, I understand there have been some families who have been in poverty for decades, maybe even generations. I understand that. But understanding America, poverty is necessary. For the Caucasian, the capitalistic system, you gotta have poverty. A whole bunch of people can't have a damn thing while a few got everything. The economic disparity in this country is so damn ridiculous. It's ludicrous for us to even talk about equality, particularly economic equality. They have so far, I mean, just way out there. It would take over 200 some years before there would be economic equality, income inequality, wealth equality. That's why, don't waste your damn time. Don't waste your time. Income. On average, the average Caucasian income, and I don't know if this is Evanston or, but I mean, the average Caucasian income is $100,000. This has $82,000, and our income is $44,000. Must be Evanston. Home value, $392,000. For us, is $212,000. But the national wealth, this is what I'm saying. The national wealth for Caucasians is about $180,000. For us, $24,000. It's ridiculous. It's ludicrous. It's asinine. What other words can I put up in there? I don't know. That's why I'm saying we should not waste our time. We should not waste our time. Reparations are necessary, but we must prepare ourselves for reparations. In fact, my good brother, Brother Ken Bridges, who was killed by the DC sniper, who started the Matai Network, which is a number of products. They have some good products too. You know, Brother Ken Bridges out of Philadelphia. He was in the DC area, Virginia, DC area, going to a meeting. And the DC sniper hit him as he was filling up his car. You know, but he was always said that first we must have internal reparations. We must repair ourselves internally. Because just as I mentioned, giving us reparations, giving us some money without the knowledge of self, without the understanding of being collective, we won't pull that money together to build some institutions. We won't establish some schools. All this money that comes, we establish our schools that will educate us, as I just read to you, what Dr. Clark said, if that young man, if that young woman shows that kind of progress and that kind of ability, educate them. Prepare them for leadership. Prepare them to be warriors for us. We won't do that. We'll spend that money like it's, we'll spend that money like it ain't nothing. Be done with. My sister, the great Griot, Sister Kara Poole, love her, man, support her. Go online. I believe you can go online and catch some of the Soul of a Nation. I try to find this part because I wanted to play it, you know. But I think with the great Griot kind of answering, I'm not talking so much about reparations, but America's wealth and reconstruction and how this whole thing. And we'll get off into the issue of reparations, no doubt, you know, and find out from you, my brothers and sisters, what is your perspective on reparations? But America's wealth, Europeans' wealth, is on the backs of African people. That's why I'm so adamant about us reclaiming, recapturing, restoring our positions as African people to take the continent and making Africans on the continent understanding and aware of the African diaspora and to work with one another to build Africa, to educate Africans, to prepare Africans to run their world. It's all this madness. Sorry about that. To prepare Africans to run our world, to be players instead of pawns, to really sit at the table and to make sure our interests are being served by members of us. That's what needs to happen. You know, I don't have a good amount of time left. I don't know. Who knows? Maybe just obviously work towards better health and, you know, you'll be afforded maybe 20, 30 more years from now. I don't know. I'm almost 70. But I would love to see that come into as it formulates into fruition. Africa for Africans. And that we begin to make that move and that Africans have told the Chinese and told the Koreans and told the Arabs, have told the Indians, have told the Caucasians, get your ass out of Africa. We're going to be isolated just like the Chinese did some time ago with Mao Zedong, kicked all of them off, killed the attorney. We're going to isolate ourselves and work on us, prepare us. We're going to come out and we're going to be a player. Because we got resources. We got wealth. We got youth. There's so much. Our potential is so great, but yet the Caucasian wants us to believe. Remember, I played that piece for you by Howard Nichols. Why Africa must remain poor. Why Africa must remain poor. Here's my good sister, the great Griot, Sister Kara Poole. America's wealth.
America, one of the wealthiest countries in the world. But the question is, how did it accumulate its wealth?
This is a nation founded on genocide and built on the backs of slaves. All right. So we started with a racial problem. We tried to eliminate one entire race, and then we used another race to build this country actually quite quickly as a new country into a world power. This country never would have had the wealth that it had it not had slavery for a couple of hundred years.
But I say to white people, look, you didn't do it. They say, yeah, that's right. We didn't have nothing to do with slavery. Yeah, but because of slavery, when you immigrants came here, America was already built with the blood, the sweat of my ancestors. So you got what you got because your fathers gave us what they gave us.
One mistake that's often made is showing how the South, the Confederacy, acquired their wealth off of the backs of our ancestors. And even then, it's reduced to just a few slave owners who saw a real benefit. No. Chattel slavery of blacks benefited the South, but just as much it benefited the North and all of America and its many European immigrants.
Well, I won't see my lonely house.
America's economic structure was propelled by its dominant export sold throughout the world, cotton. This one crop provided over half of all U.S. exports earnings. And by 1840, 60% of the world's cotton was grown, picked, and labored over for free by our ancestors. These plantation owners were raking in money, accumulating great wealth, and never having to pay one dime to their laborers. But the North was just as involved. The North developed a variety of businesses that provided services to the slave South, like textile factories, insurance companies, shippers, and cotton brokers. But it doesn't stop at the slave owner or the businesses that provided the services to the slave system. Banks, yes. Bankers on Wall Street made millions selling goods to the South, along with giving loans and creating banks to finance Southern plantations. And much of the same wealth they still have today. Let me give you some examples. J.P. Morgan and Chase Bank admitted that between the years of 1831 to 1865, two of their predecessor banks, Citizens Bank and Canal Bank in Louisiana, accepted 13,000 slaves as collateral on loans that slave masters defaulted. One of the more successful banking families that built much of their wealth on the slave trade was the Brown family, more commonly known as the Brown Brothers and Harriman Company, which is the oldest and largest private investment bank. The Brown Brothers owned hundreds of slaves. This family dominated the cotton industry. They made a huge fortune by lending millions to Southern planters and cotton brokers. Another portion of their wealth came by renting and the sales of slave ships they sold to slave merchants. They served as one of the most important sources of capital in foreign exchange in the U.S. economy. Wachovia Bank, recently acquired by Wells Fargo, also profited heavily off of this cruel system. Mayor Rothschild, a German banker and the founder of the Rothschild banking dynasty, which is believed to have become the wealthiest family in human history, made enormous gains by using our ancestors as collateral. The insurance industry also saw great benefits from slavery. Companies like AIG, Aetna, New York Life were the forerunners in this industry. But see, it's also very important to note that these same plantation owners and business owners would donate large sums of this wealth in order to train their children and the next generation on containing the wealth. For example, Harvard. Harvard was built due to large amounts of money given by Isaac Royall, a plantation owner in the Caribbean islands of Antigua, who made a massive fortune off of his many sugar plantations. Yale was able to build its famous library and establish its prestigious scholarship program. Princeton. By the mid-1700s, many of its students were sons of plantation owners. Brown University, named after the famous slave owner banker, the Brown Brothers. A large portion of this campus was built with slave labor. And these are just a few of the many institutions that was built with slave money. See, these men would be looked at as great businessmen, philanthropists, But in actuality, they were securing the wealth of their future by training and educating the next generation that would take over their plantations and their businesses and even become government officials responsible for creating laws, regulations, and policies that would keep blacks fighting for human rights and access to this stolen wealth. For decades, after slavery, blacks have fought against unequal education, which is a sure way of ensuring wealth disparities. We fought grandfather clauses to prevent us from affecting government in ways that could transfer wealth. Land grants, free land issued from the government that blacks were restricted from. The black codes, housing restrictions, redlining and FDA guarantee loans, predatory bank lending, convict leasing, which utilize black labor but does not transfer the wealth. I wish that I could say that this wealth disparity in America was isolated only in America, but it's not.
All the wealth that was generated that helped to make Britain great, so-called, the British Empire, all of this came from enslavement and colonialism and ill-gotten gains. And it links to this modern discussion around inequality and the huge gap between the nations, not only in terms of Britain and Europe, but also the rest of the world, and in particular, Africa and the Caribbean.
The truth is, this is the same scenario across every colonized land. Today, as a people, we fight for the Confederate flags to come down. We even fight for people to stop using the word nigger. Right. Or other forms of bigotry to not be used. But we've been duped into believing that it's absolutely foolish to continue to fight for reparations. Many of us don't recognize the direct ties between the past and the wealth that was carried into today. Our ancestors were forced to invest in this economy without ever receiving a return. Unlike Jews, reparations were never paid to slaves or their descendants to help balance out this unjustified wealth. But understand that the reason our ancestors were enslaved was not for the purpose of being able to call us a... Right. It was not even for the purpose of being able to raise a slave flag. No. All of the killing, the torturing, dehumanizing, inhumane treatment all boiled down to one reason: wealth. It was all business. Understand that. I know that our brother Martin did.
I still have a dream.
Not that one.
At the very same time that America refused to give the Negro any land, through an act of Congress, our government was giving away millions of acres of land in the West and the Midwest, which meant that it was willing to undergird its white peasants from Europe with an economic floor. But not only did they give the land, they built land-grant colleges with government money to teach them how to farm. Not only that, they provided county agents to further their expertise in farming. Not only that, they provided low interest rates in order that they could mechanize their farms. Not only that, today many of these people are receiving millions of dollars in federal subsidies not to farm, and they are the very people telling the black man that he ought to lift himself by his own bootstraps. Now, this is what we are faced with, and this is the reality. Now, when we come to Washington, in this campaign, we are coming to get our check.
The Great Griot, Sister Kara Poole. And I got another piece I'm going to play after the break on Reconstruction. But brothers and sisters, don't get me wrong. I'm definitely for reparations. I'm not for reparations like ADOS, which is what is that, the American Descendants of, I even hate the acronym. I hate what it stands for, I tell you, who believe that, yes, we're deserving of reparations for the harm that has been done to us, and only American Africans, no immigrants, nobody from the Caribbean, nobody from Africa, wherever else, those who were born here. The other degree could be how much African blood do you have? Of course, the Europeans said the one drop rule. So if a Caucasian looking African, I don't believe I'm a Caucasian looking African, you know, but my skin complexion is lighter. My hair is whatever. But believe me, just like the saying, I wasn't born in Africa, but Africa was born in me. I believe I love African as much as any African on this planet and would never betray our people. Never. And so, who gets reparations? How do you decide? You know, it's just like Caucasians claiming Africa. The Afrikaners in Southern Africa believe they're just as much African as the Bantu or the Zulu or the Ashanti or whoever. We must decide, not the Europeans. That's why, to me, the fight for the repair is global. It's global. We get these countries, sit their ass at a table and tell them, this is what you have done, France. This is what you have done, Germany. This is what you have done, United Kingdom, UK, whatever. This is what you have done. I'm going to take a call. Before we go to the break, and we're going to go to the break in a minute. But 602, good morning.
Good morning, Brother Oshie.
Ah, Brother Marcus, how are you this morning, dear brother?
I am doing great, good brother. You know, I am thinking that this reparation thing that they're bringing up, you know, I think it's just a carrot and a stick. It's another distraction again for black people. Because we know that really in order for you to get reparation, you have to have some power. You see, we have to have some power. But you see, they know that there is a movement taking place undercurrent in this country. A lot of black people are saying, you know what, I'm sick and tired of this place.
Right.
Even Steve Wonder, the brother who is blind.
He's blind, but yet he can see, huh? He has inner vision, right?
Exactly. He has inner vision, and he said to hell with this, he's moving.
See? That's right.
So they know it's an undercurrent taking place in this country, so they come up with this carrot and a stick, said, here. Look, ignore these people and let us focus on our thing. You know, I saw an article today it's over YouTube. I don't know if it's true, but they say that in the Congo, the people, the villagers found a whole mountain full of gold. You see? A whole mountain full of gold, brother, and them folks right up there start digging it down. I say, look, they ain't even scratched the surface of the wealth in Africa yet.
Right. See? Well, I mean, Marcus, they have been in Africa ripping us off for centuries.
Yes, for centuries.
And still, Africa has more resources than any other place on the planet.
I'm telling you. So, the objective is to get these people out. Simple. Get them the hell out of Africa. Drive them hard. If you ain't going to stay here and help build Africa and live under African law, then you need to get the hell out.
There you go.
You know what I'm saying? And clean house, because we are just sick and tired of these parasites. Everybody come and they just suck in our blood. Suck everybody. You know, and we not supposed to talk about it. Don't say anything about it. You should just shut up and take it. The moment we start to say, hey, you're ripping me off. Oh, you're oppressing me. Oh, something is wrong with you. You shouldn't say that. You're being a racist. See, they twist this thing around. But I think our people are finally waking up. And the more I hear the people, they're saying, for hell. So they're coming with all kinds. They're going to come up with all kind of stimulus, all kind of things to keep us looking here. I say, take it. Take whatever they have. If they come with a reparation, grab it and move your behind to the motherland. Buy your equipment here and go build our empire there, because that's where we was great in the past.
That's right.
That's where we'll be great in the future.
I say.
And to hell with these people, because they ain't going to change.
No, they're not. They ain't a damn thing we could do or say to make them change. They believe in cognitive dissonance.
Exactly. They ain't going to change. So
no.
Why the hell even stay here arguing with them, trying to argue your humanity with them? You know, please, you know. Anyway, I'll mute my phone and
All
I'm
right.
here, brother.
Right on, my brother. Thank you so much, Brother Marcus. Appreciate you, man.
No problem.
All
no
right.
problem.
Yeah, Brother Marcus. Some good callers, good listeners. Appreciate all of y'all. I really do. I really do. Brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we have more discussion. And you can join the discussion if you're on if you're on already, hit star twice. That'll let you in. But if not, give us a call at 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We'll be right back. You stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. James Brown, The Big Payback. got to get back. We need some get back. In the appropriate time, it'll happen. You know it. You know it. Other programming we have here on Time for New Week Media. Once again, this program is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. All times are going to give our Eastern times on Monday from 6 to 8. Acres of Diamonds, public affairs programming with Brother Jihad Ahmed out of Philadelphia. Followed by from 8 to 9 on Mondays, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Mawia Kamban and Nataki Kamban. That's followed by from 9 to 10, Conversation, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey of Encobra. On Tuesdays from 8 to 10, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. On Thursdays from 7 to 9, Melanin Live with Chief Lance Jones and Sister Benisiwa Ayan. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. On Saturdays from 4 to 6, Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And then at 7 on Saturdays, from 7 to 9 on Saturdays, the Sankofa Elders Council. Sunday at 7 p.m., once again, it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And, of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. Mama Nabantu sent me this text, and of course she mentioned Wadada's. You can get collard green ice cream at Wadada's, but she also sent me there's a GoFundMe for Sister Woody, who made her transition back in February 13th. She was a phenomenal educator for over 35 years, running Gates City Academy in Atlanta, a private African-centered school. Derek Bozeman of the Davis Bozeman Law, Derek Bozeman on 1380 WOKY. Derek Bozeman is helping to raise funds for her memorial and burial. That is today and tomorrow from 4 to 7. So on AM, 1380 AM WOKY, on the, from 4 to 7, he's going to be on talking about raising some funds to help this sister. So if you can in your Atlanta area, or if you got TuneIn, just go to TuneIn and put in the search WAOK 1380, WAOK 1380. Make it a favorite, and that's talk radio here in Atlanta. Also, too, BB Itumeh, once again, I'm promoting BB Itumeh, A-B-I-B-I-T-I, Itumeh, M-I, bbitumeh.com, BB Itumeh, M-I. And once again, they're having a African-centered event, African-centered consciousness, African on the periphery, behavior, and why we have made so little progress. That is this Saturday at 9 p.m. Excuse me, 9 a.m. It is at 9 in the morning, 9 a.m. Okay? And you can go to bbitumeh.com. Be a member, and that information will be there. And you can get the tickets. Hit it, and you can get the tickets. This presentation by Kamal Kamban and his son, Obadeli Kamban, discussed what happened when our goal was to raise consciousness rather than raising behavior. This lopsided effect has led to those who may appear to have an African-centered thought and even African-centered speech, but the behavior is anything but African-centered. What foods do we eat? What type of houses do we live in? What languages do we speak to our children? This talk will frame the rhetorical ethic in the context of aggressive ideological mimicry, whereby nothing, not everything, is what it seems to be. Moreover, we will discuss African-centered schools that have become factories to churn out workers for building the European nation rather than the comedic African-centered nation. Finally, the presentation will address the foregoing in terms of why we have made so little progress and the way forward for making substantiated intergenerational progress toward building Kemet, the African nation and land of the blacks. by moving beyond fundamental alternative towards fundamental interrelationships. And that is this Saturday, brothers and sisters, this Saturday on bbatumi.com. Go to bbatumi.com, African-centered consciousness. I hope that you enjoyed the great griot, Sister Kara Poole. What I love to get that sister on the radio, on this program. Man, she is beautiful. She is beautiful. I've been listening to her. In fact, I listened to her while I played some of hers a few years ago, and she has more content. So go to YouTube. Also, go to YouTube. You know, one of my favorite movies is Brother Future. Go to YouTube. Check out Brother Future. It's a story about this one brother in Detroit who was on the hustle. He didn't care about school. You know, he's daydreaming. He has a premonition, though, and it's deep. Well, he had ripped off some cats who were ripping off an electronic store, so they had some DVD players, which was the new stuff at the time, because Brother Future's 1991, came out in 1991. And he's hustling on the street, him and his friend Crunch. And Crunch is African-centered. You know, he's into history and so forth. And he wears a African red, black, and green medallion, you know. So they were talking, and so the police pull up, and the brother makes a run for it. He gets hit by a car, and he's transposed back to 1822, South Carolina. He awakens by this particular tree, and he's chased. He sees his young brother running, has a shackle on, and then has these two catchers come up. You know, he encounters them, and they take him captive. And he is put on the auction block. It's a good movie. It's a very good movie. Carl Lumley plays Denmark Vesey. Vanessa McGee is in it. Playing Martella, the sister who psychic who helps TJ, the brother who is transposed back to 1822 South Carolina, how he can get back to present day. Check it out. Let me know what you think. Brother Future. There's a lot of other good stuff on YouTube as it pertains to us. You know, like I said, you can go to YouTube and have the ancestors speak, you know. And contemporaries. So let us continue with this discussion. Once again, you know, I'm definitely down with reparations. But just giving money and saying that's it. Now, the Evanston, Illinois proposal, and I try to find something on it. What is, you know, the main points and how is it going to be distributed? Just for, of course, for residents of who have been redlined, who have been shut out, you know, and some think that this could be a model for other communities. Personally, I don't, because see, I don't want, just like here in America with Adolf, what has happened to African people happened to African people by Europeans. It wasn't America. It wasn't Spain. It wasn't Portugal and France. It was all of them. It was all of them. And once we get our act together, we will confront them and demand the compensation. Sometimes it could be equipment or technological property, whatever it is that was going to repair us, because that's what it should be about. Repair. If you just get some dough and your mind is still what it is, you still a Negro pen. You still have a Yorugu mindset. Yes, it'll benefit you at the moment because you got some money, but it's not going to do a damn thing for future generations unless you understand to put that money together, to use that money to benefit our people, unless we do that. That's why I was saying about Brother Ken Bridges. He talked about, before we really talk about reparations, family, we need to talk about internal reparations. We need to repair ourselves. We need to repair ourselves some damage and to come into an understanding of forgiveness of ourselves. Some of us, I mean, I'm going to tell you, I know people who hate us. They're black. They're black. But they hate the fact. They hate the fact of what has happened to us. And they hate the fact of what we're doing to ourselves. So they blame us for the ignorance. Or as you like to say, the gross incompetence. We are grossly incompetent. You know, blame us for this issues. I don't blame us. I put the blame where it squarely belongs, on the perpetrators of the dastardly deed of manipulating a people's mind. See, he doesn't even understand, or the son sister doesn't even understand, that this is what the European has done to them, because they believe they have their own mind. They believe their thinking, you know, is sound and rational. And what they see is the fact that we're not competitive, that we're not, you know, not understanding this situation that we're experiencing is by design, and it is their design. Here's another great piece from the great Griot. We'll play this, and then we'll get into further discussion. The great Griot.
Because we aren't taught the truth about Black Reconstruction, we can't learn the much needed lesson from that moment in history, which is identical to today. And when you can't learn from history, you are doomed to repeat it and repeat it and repeat it and repeat it.
Many of us who have not studied, for instance, Reconstruction history, the history of the United States, particularly of African Americans during the 1860s and 70s, may think that we are entering a new era in American history. We may think that the things that we're witnessing today, the elections of blacks to political office and their appointment to various positions, their activities in various corporations, and so forth, is something new in American history. And yet, a study of Reconstruction history will quickly convince us that we are currently undergoing deja vu.
Many blacks during Reconstruction saw an opportunity towards freedom and liberation through the promises of equality under this system. In just 5 years, legislation was passed that appeared to be a moment of progression for black people in America. Just like today, blacks were given voting rights, civil rights. Blacks were holding government positions, and we were gaining back control of our life and labor. But what appeared to be progress began to unravel at the seams. As a people, the promises of freedom and equality started out with disenfranchisement. Lincoln, the great emancipator, signed legislation to give slave plantation property that was confiscated during the war back to slave owner heirs, instead of giving it to those that toiled free on the land for centuries. Blacks understood that freedom on paper without owning land did not equate to true freedom, but dependency. In early 1865, General William T. Sherman met in Georgia with 20 black ministers, many of whom were ex-enslaved, and they expressed their need for land. So Sherman sent out special field order number 15, designating the entire southern coastline, over 30 miles inland, exclusively for black settlement. The stipulation was for each family to take no more than 40 acres. Within months, over 40,000 freedmen migrated to this area. Months later, in the same year, Andrew Johnson, president after Lincoln's assassination, would ensure that the land went back to slave owners, removing blacks from the land. Johnson would swiftly accomplish this with making the process easy for his southern constituents to rejoin the Union, allowing them to rejoin without a guarantee to uphold the new rights of blacks. So here they were, back in control of their land, but not in control of their once free labor force. So they implemented black codes, strategically entrapping Africans' labor back into the white power system, whether on the plantation or in the growing convict leasing system. Yet and still with the disenfranchisement, after Constitutional Amendment 14 and 15 were passed, more blacks were voted into office in southern states than any other period in history. Blacks were willing to take this opportunity in hopes of guaranteeing their freedom. But southern whites who grew tired of the social and political shift unified.
They're preaching to our kids in schools, these black savages are equals. They're our brothers and sisters. I tell them they're crazy. We're white people. We're standing up for our white rights.
The Klan was born 100 years ago in Pulaski, Tennessee, as a six-member social club. But 6 years later, the Klan had 500,000 members, and the burning cross, the Klan trademark, became a symbol of the violence it used to keep the newly freed Negroes in their place.
The 1860s and 70s was the beginning of some of the worst retaliatory mob violence against blacks in America. April 13, 1873, would reach a pinnacle in white terrorist violence during Reconstruction and would set a strong precedent of the federal government's complicity. In Colfax, Louisiana, a large group of blacks joined at the courthouse to protect the government official's position after a close election. Over 300 armed white men came to the courthouse and killed hundreds of blacks and three white Republicans, many in cold blood. Using cannons, burning hundreds within the courthouse, and shooting those that fled. Of those 300 men, nine stood trial. Of those nine, three were found guilty, and an appeal would later release those three. The Supreme Court later ruled in U.S. versus Cruikshank, the leader of this massacre, that it was not the U.S. government's responsibility to protect blacks against simple murder. It stated that the 14th Amendment, the equal right protection of citizens, did not apply to the actions of individuals against individuals, but only to the actions of state governments. So the federal government was no longer responsible to prosecute white terrorist groups, which had become the military arm of the South. The ultimate agenda of reuniting these white power systems was slowly being accomplished, and leveraging the black population was no longer needed. So instead of the government sending more federal troops to protect their said new citizens, the North formed an agreement with the South, the Compromise of 1877.
Compromise of 1877 is arguably the most devastating single government action in the history of blacks in America. This is when a group of politicians convened at the Wormley Hotel in Washington, D.C. to attempt to resolve the deadlocked presidential election of 1876 between Rutherford B. Hayes and Samuel Tilden. They agreed that if Hayes were awarded the presidency, he would remove government protection of the black ex-slaves in the South and allow the former Southern slaveholding class to return to power. And in their return to power, we would be turned back to the plantation in a new form of slavery. This is the exact point in history when American whites collectively decided that black emancipation was a mistake. And from that point forward, blacks would never have freedom, justice, or equality in American society.
This was the green light to kill blacks with impunity. And by 1883, the civil rights that had been given were retracted, with the Supreme Court ruling that forbidding discrimination was unconstitutional and not authorized by the 13th and 14th Amendment. The illusion of freedom for blacks dissipated.
The laws don't protect anyone. And there are so many of us who believe that fair housing laws and anti-discrimination laws and civil rights laws and voting laws and so forth guarantee our freedom. What an illusion. What a flight into fantasy. Laws are no stronger than their enforcers. And the same people who pass those laws are the same people who are responsible for enforcing the law. And if the people then who enforce the law no longer decide to do so, the laws then are of no value and have no power. Ultimately then, fairness rests, and the fairness of treatment rests, not in laws, but in the activities of people, and in the attitude and consciousness of people. And if people who are responsible for enforcing those laws change their attitudes, then the treatment of those people whose freedom is protected by those so-called laws is now changed as well. You cannot put your faith in a white man's law and in laws enforced by whites. I have warned people many times that if it comes one day where the society has to make a choice between feeding white children and feeding black children, no amounts of civil rights laws or any other laws on the books will prevent those people from feeding their children first. It is a silly faith that we have then in laws. And for people in the 1970s and 80s and 90s to still rest their freedom on the basis of laws, when the very history itself shows us that this cannot be done, we must question their sanity and what they have learned from the study of that history.
Anytime we tie our freedom and liberation to the words and written promises of those that maintain a system that has historically disenfranchised us, we may be under an illusion. It only creates a powerless, dependent relationship, one that we've been a part of for centuries. One of the master and the other of the slave. So I'll leave you with three questions, and I want to see your response below. Can freedom ever be given? Two, can a group ever loan you your freedom through their promise or treaty or signed agreement or amendment that relies on their discretion to uphold it? Three, more importantly, Is freedom ever freedom without having your own sovereignty to protect it? I want to know your answers.
What is the definition of freedom, justice, and equality for the black man, and where and when is it to be attained?
Well, take equality first. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad doesn't teach us to associate equality with whites. Equality has nothing to do with whites. We don't want to be equal with the white man. He's not the criteria or yardstick by which equality is measured. He's not in a position to tell us we are equal. It's not his right. It's not his to do. Equality, we want equality. We had equality before the white man was created. We had equality before the white man came into existence. And we want equality whether the white man is on this earth or not. Equality means the opportunity to develop all of our dormant potential, all of our dormant capability. In developing this dormant capability, the right and the ability to stand on this earth on some land of our own, and bring about a civilization and a society in which we will be completely independent, complete freedom to take care of the needs, to take care of the wants and the likes and the dislikes of our people, to establish our own nation, our own society, our own heaven, our own future. This is what we mean by freedom, by equality, and justice means as you sow, so shall you reap. If you do wrong, you'll get wrong in return. And if you do right, you'll get right in return. When you're in your own nation, in your own land, you're in a position to get justice. But when you're in another man's country, in another man's land, under another man's flag, and under another man's government, and under another man's court system, you have to look to that other man for justice, and you'll never get it. And Negroes in this country probably are authorities on that.
Please help support the Great Rio team to continue telling our stories. You can donate to our online fund by clicking the link or by purchasing merchandise on our website, and that's thegreatrio.com.
Ashe. You know, any conscious, serious African-centered person can understand what she's saying, what Dr. Amos Wilson was saying, what Minister Louis Farrakhan was saying, what El Hajj Malik El Shabazz, Brother Omar Wali, Malcolm X was saying. I look at this present day and I look at our situation. It will never improve until we change the way we look at ourselves and each other. It will never. And us believing that these votes that we casted back in November of last year and in the future will ultimately change our condition. That a Caucasian or any other ethnicity that sits in the White House is going to make that happen. Now, there's a piece that's going around saying that Barack Obama was considering pushing for reparations, but he knew the backlash that he was going to be confronted with. Well, you know, Barack Obama had no courage. As far as I'm concerned, as an African, he did exactly what he was designed to do as the president of the United Snakes. Because understand something, no matter the person who occupies that position, be it a male or female, or what ethnicity they may have, be it Indian, African, whatever, Their whole purpose is to maintain and sustain the privilege that Caucasians have created for themselves, that Europeans have created for themselves. That's what that position does and is supposed to be about, and to making sure that whatever they have to do to maintain that and their position in the world, that's what they'll do. They're not about equality. They're not about fairness. They're not about righteousness. Not about none of that. None of that. That's why Brother Marcus was on point. Stated many times, we're dealing with an evil entity. That's why, honestly, from a presidential standpoint, Trump, as bad as he was, and he was the worst, but the fact that Trump was the Caucasian, he wasn't, you know, Trump was the Caucasian straight up, straight, no chaser. Just like when he was being interviewed with Woodward, talking about the virus and so forth. Then Woodward posed some questions about equality and so forth. He said, I don't care about the Negroes. You drinking the Kool-Aid about affirmative action, about this, that, and the other. I could give less than a rat's ass. My whole purpose is to make sure that we continue to grow the economy. We continue to make money. We continue to do whatever it is that is necessary for to maintain the dominance and control that we have created for ourselves. What did the Caucasian Howard Nicholas say? We must keep Africa poor. Because by keeping Africa poor assures us, Europeans, Caucasians, of maintaining and sustaining the privilege and the riches that we have designed for ourselves. There is no way that you are going to, I mean, individually, yeah. Because, you know, individualism is a European, Caucasian, or a white desire. Individualism, that it is their desire. But collectivism is an African need, an imperative, a must. Being collective. We must purge ourselves of this ignorance and the belief that this country will do something righteous for us. Yes, I'm definitely down with reparations. But before we even talk about reparations to these Caucasians, we must repair ourselves. When, you know, John Conyers put forth that bill since in the 80s. I'm kind of not sure exactly what year. I think the latter part of the 80s. This was not the reparations bill in itself. This was to study the effects of our captivity and to put some funding behind that. And yet, every year, every time that bill came, it never got out of committee. It was never voted by the full Senate, or whoever is supposed to, or even probably the full House. Never. If you want to see a number of people are on, if you want to have conversation, hit star twice, and I'll get you in, and we can have conversation on what we're talking about today, or maybe something you want to bring to the table. Hit star twice. I see. Bookman. Bookman.
Hey,
hold on.
How you doing?
I'm doing fine, Bookman. How are you, brother?
I'm good. Thank you. I'm listening, and I'm amazed. First, thank you so much for the show. You know, that's my second time tuning in. I really appreciate the piece about reconstruction, you know.
Okay.
Sometimes you... you forget. I know I'm not a student of Reconstruction, so I didn't really know too much about it. But
right.
Listening, hearing that, you know, all these, we had all these officials, you know, all these representatives back in the days, and now we see them as, you know, improvement. Now we because we don't know our story, you know, we don't recognize the signs. So it's really, it really baffles me. And I'm sitting here thinking, if white folks decided today they want their Negroes back on the plantation, I wonder what will happen.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Well, I mean, to a certain degree, when you look at what happened with Convict Leasing, but more importantly, what's happening with the prison industrial complex. It is a form of captivity enslavement now, because in some prisons, men are doing work. They are, you know, putting products together and growing food. I mean, you know, they're doing work.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah. All right, brother. All right, dear brother Bokman. I appreciate you listening, my brother. Continue to do so. All right, brother. Peace. Stay listen. I'll just mute you, so continue to listen. Mama Nabantu.
Yes. How are you?
I'm well, sister. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I just wanted to share that here in the city of Decatur, where I live, Brother Mawuli and myself and a few others are working on reparations for the city of Decatur.
Okay.
And that's in process. We've been talking about it, but we're planning to meet shortly to really solidify the steps toward making it happen. And we are in contact with the sister out of Evansville outside of Illinois.
Okay, yes.
And she was suggesting that, you know, wherever you are locally, you can start with your city council and do the same thing they did, and they're willing to support and give us suggestions as we move forward. And as you know, we've already taken down one statue, Confederate statue, here in the city of Decatur. And the cannon, I think yesterday somebody told me somebody spray painted. It's getting ready to go down as well.
Okay. I hear you. All right. Thank you, Mama Nabantu. And I look forward to the progress on that. And you can come back and update us. Okay. All right. Peace. 646-646. Good afternoon.
Hey, what's happening, Odios?
What's up?
Listen, man. I always wonder why people have this oppression that white folks go treat them good, that white folks go treat them with respect, that white folks go treat them with dignity. The only purpose that white folks have for your black ass is to use you. And that just happened with your state right there in Georgia in this whole election thing. Here it is, you now give them a position of power to pick and choose what they want to use it for. And then to turn around now and see these crackers doing what they doing in regards to allowing people to vote. And here it is, you're not getting no type of serious pushback from these devils that you put in office. It just goes to show you that all you is like my man said many years ago, a footstool. That's what he was, a footstool to the white man. He just used you. And the thing is, everybody's talking about this John Lewis bill and how it should pass, and then it would not allow them to be able to suppress your voting rights and things of that nature. Now, if they really, really about democracy as they claim to, then you would have no problem passing the bill. But just like the cracker said yesterday, we got to do these things in order for us to have a chance. And now you got a situation to where as it may go to the Supreme Court and then be dealt with, and they going to do what they going to do. But if you just stand up from Jump Street and pass the John Lewis bill, then all of that sugar, honey, iced tea would be for what not. But see, what black people don't understand is Democrats are just a kind of version of Republicans, them stinking, filthy crackers. So if you really expect them respect, dignity, and anything from the white man, you are effing fool. And I mean, I'm sick of it. I'm just like, come on, man. If we ain't in 500 years figuring it out yet, then you effing stupid like they are, and of no value. So why go through this? It makes no sense to me. I'm just sick of it. I'm tired of being in a situation where we as an African people are constantly begging our enemy to be humane to us.
See,
Just make up your mind. You're going to do what you have to do and die.
Right.
That's
See, the deal is, Jay, is that because they put it on paper, just as Dr. Amos Wilson in a piece that I did from the Great Griot, he said it don't mean nothing. The laws that they have on paper don't mean a damn thing. But because that we believe we can hold them to what they put on paper, just like Dr. King said, you know, I want to hold you to what you put on paper. This is what you said, you know. No, it's not worth the paper that it's printed on. The Caucasian has a mindset that this is who he is. It may not even be written, but it is clearly understood, and they want you to clearly understand it. You see? So therefore, you know, even though I got these things on paper, it doesn't really apply to you. You think it does, but it doesn't. And we're going to do what we continue to do, and that is do things in our best interests. And truly, the thing that in their best interest.
What's best interest? Who gonna do things for what's in our best interest?
No, the European's going to do things for his best interest. He is going to continue to do things in his best interest make sure that he...
We ain't doing nothing in our best interest.
No.
We as a people are doing nothing in our best interest. All we doing is placing ourselves in a position to be used and abused and manipulated and effed over. And that's just a fact. Now, you may not want to agree or you may not want to hear it, but that's all we are as a people that don't understand who we are, footstools.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, let me get this call in. Let me get a call in, Jay. Just hold on, okay? We got time. 410-410. Good afternoon. 410-410. Okay.
Just hello? On.
Hey, Mama Jackie, how are you?
Yes, I'm good to go. How are you? How you been?
I've been well, dear. You are good to go. I've been well. Thank you for listening and thank you for calling in.
I didn't realize you were talking to me when you said 410.
Well, I seen Baltimore, and that's one of my favorite people. You from one of my favorite cities, BMO. So, yes.
Yeah. Pray for my city.
I heard
that. And pray for our children.
That's for sure.
Not just in Baltimore, but in Atlanta, because we have lost our mind. And we failed. We failed to emphasize to our children how awesome we are, how awesome we are. Many of them don't know it. And then the irony is they end up shooting themselves. What's going on?
Yeah.
What are we doing anything?
Well, the thing is this. We live in a society, and in fact, in a world run by Europeans. Look at the continent. The continent has been deeply affected by Europeans because of the colonization. And just as that thing I would read to us every now and then about Lord Macaulay, what he said, when I came to Africa, these people were beautiful. I didn't see any poverty. I didn't see any of this. It was beautiful. And if we're to do what we want to do, which is take their resources, take their people, take their land, then we have to replace their culture and their spirituality with what we want to give them. And once we've done that, then we can take, we can rule them. And that's what happened. You see? So, you know, when we, because, I mean, they, we kill ourselves on the continent. I mean, just.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, I just read where once again, some group just abducted, you know, quite a few young sisters. Just came into the school and just abducted them. And, you know, this has happened.
You're talking about in Nigeria?
In Nigeria, again, yes. So, yes. I mean, this insanity continues to happen because of the influence and the impact of Europeans on African lives. We got to get them. Go ahead.
Now, I was going to say, what really frightens me, I didn't look at the program last night. I told everybody to watch it, and then I fell asleep.
Soul of a Nation. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but when I was told that Sterling Brown said he didn't know he was black until he invited a Caucasoid to a dance.
Right.
He was a teenager. I thought, oh, my God, he must have been insane. But then I was told that two others who are in his generation, in his age group, said something similar. What? You get to be 15 and 16 and you wake up and know that you're black? Isn't that scary?
Yeah, because see, you know, though, because his generation is the generation that whose parents made many sacrifices to get out of the hood. To get out of the,
right.
You know, out of, and they were able to move into suburbs and other areas and have influenced by Caucasian. They might have been the only child at the school, and they can consider themselves American. They might not have considered themselves white, because they knew that, but they were American. They're just as American as those. And so when that other reality hits, yeah, you might be an American, but you really ain't shit. Or excuse me, you really ain't sugar, honey, iced tea. As far as that is concerned, you know, and so you got to always know your place. See,
yeah.
So that smacked him in the face. You got to know your place.
But we have to understand that when we move into communities like that and we send our children to schools like that, when we lose part of our culture, who do we blame? Who do we blame?
Well, you know, once again, Jackie, I know that we could blame ourselves for, you know, but the reality is that when you have been bombarded 24/7, 365 with images and notions of your inferiority and your inability to come together, you know, because you have believed that the Europeans, ISIS, colder, and who and what he is what is being desired and what is you should live up to, you know, that the blame goes to them. But yes, we do serve some blame because we can't break the monopoly that the European has on our minds. We can't release the vice grip that they have on our minds, you know? And so that, I blame them. I blame them. Although there's a number of us like yourself and all of us and organizations such as ASCAC and National Black United Front, whatever, who has said to us, no. Don't go there. Come with us. Come here. Just like Bibi Atoumi. I'm promoting Bibi Atoumi. Something has, you know, you can get out of Facebook. You can get out of all these other, you know, avenues by which you can surf the internet and get information and buy products and so forth and things. Go to bibiatoumi.com and begin to use that as a mechanism of sharing information.
What is it called? You familiar with it in Ubuntu?
Bibi Atoumi.
Bibi Atoumi.
Right. A-B-I-B-I-T-U-M-I. BibiAtoumi.com. You'll enjoy it. Believe me. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
All right.
Thanks for the info.
Oh, thank you, Mama Jackie. Peace.
Okay.
I appreciate all those who have called and have a chance to get in and share information with us. My guest Friday will be Brother Akil Parker again. I thought I was going to have another guest, and he had to cancel on me. So Brother Akil Parker is going to, we're going to talk about the Tulsa massacre and other massacres where, you know, just like, you know, the one where the brothers after the Reconstruction, during Reconstruction, they established a whole, it was in North Carolina, and the Caucasians, oh, hell no. They went in just like the Colfax, where they shot and killed those brothers in Colfax in Louisiana. We have lived under European terror for far too damn long. And we need leadership, men and women, to say enough is enough. Africans on the continent, Africans in the diaspora, let's get this shit together and run our country, run our land, our resources, and our people. Educate our children from the very beginning all the way up to the point that they can go anywhere, any educational institution, anywhere in the world, and be successful. Now is the time. The time is now. Brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just to M-I-N-D, but to M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in the hell, damn it, don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shemhotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bibi Vihardie. Bibi Vihardie means our victorious destiny. And yes, brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. Peace, family. Hope to see you on Friday.